Yeah, she's out the back in case anyone comes. Yeah. The door's not working. Jeez. Good to go? Good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting, to everyone here and for those who are watching along at home. My name is Paula Eat, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome you all to tonight's meeting on Monday the 20th of November 2023. It's 5:30pm, so I officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with our policy, I'll ask the General Manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and also acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, Deputy Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr Spinks, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve. Our new, and I mean new as in first day, a very warm welcome to our new Director of Environment Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, who is on her first day, and hopefully there'll be a second day. And also we have with us, possibly for the last time, the Acting Director of Environment Development and Community Services, Ms Salisbury. We also have the Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, and Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillor Cordover. On page one now, the motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 21, held on the 6th of November 2023, be confirmed as a true record. Looking for a mover. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Still on page one, workshops held since the last council meeting. We had a workshop last Monday evening, which was the LGBTIQA plus inclusive leadership training. On page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration they'd like to declare? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Declaration in closed session, but I'll be staying in the room.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
I also have a declaration in closed session and will be leaving the room.
Thank you very much. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open to closed or closed into open session? No? Thank you. We don't have any members of the public with us this evening. And questions on notice from the public, we have two. The role of counsel from Mr Biggins and an officer response from Mr Arnold. And a question from Ms Landon in relation to the biodiversity offset policy with an officer's response from Mr Stander. If anybody does want to put a question on notice, they can do so by completing the form on Council's website or by emailing us at kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just have a couple of questions around the Margate Main Street Master Plan that's on our capital works for this for 23-24. Questions are, what stage are we at in terms of engaging someone to undertake the work? What consultation with the Margate community will we be doing? And whether we have State Growth on board for this project?
Mr Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. We're reasonably well advanced in terms of actually getting someone or awarding the contract. So we had quite a good response back from a number of different consultants, which is good. And we've been through the assessment and have come up with a preferred applicant. In terms of State Growth, they've been involved from the day dot, so they got involved in terms of looking at the brief that we actually sent out and providing some commentary, and they've also looked at the shortlisted proponents we've got and provided some commentary on that, and they will also remain a very important stakeholder as we go through the study, as will the community as well. That forms a large part of the project, so there will be a number of community workshops, online surveys and the like as well at the same time. So, yes, we're expecting quite a bit of, hopefully quite a bit of community input.
Any further questions?
Yeah, I guess just a follow-up question is any approximate timeframes on when that's likely to occur or get started?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, we're hoping to get an inception meeting this side of Christmas, and they're all due to complete the project by the end of the financial year, so it'll go over a number of months. But yes, so hopefully get a start very soon.
Thanks. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Can I just ask a follow-up question on that in regards to, I think a couple of months ago I might have asked if we're going to be taking like a place-based type approach to the Margate versus having a master plan that then goes to the community. Can I just understand what the process is, please?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, a little bit like that in terms of the fact that we'll be involving the community from the start in terms of actually getting their feedback, all the different elements of the community and obviously, as I said, state growth as well because it's their highway corridor. So we'd like to gather all that information together before putting a draft together, very similar to what we did in Kingston, then provide that information back as a draft to the community to make some final comments on.
Great, thank you. And just a further two questions. I was emailed about the Woodbridge Hall. What is happening regarding the new Woodbridge Hall toilets? They have been finished for a few months but are still not open. They may be awaiting council approval, the person's asked, and the old toilets are starting to deteriorate with one cistern currently leaking.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the toilets are not quite complete. There's a few fixtures that needed to be installed until we can get building surveyor sign off, so hopefully we'll get that done soon. The old toilets will be locked as soon as we can commission the new ones, but we'll need to put in a capital bid to have them demolished in the new year.
Great, thank you. And a question regarding textile waste. A resident has let me know about this business called Apparel, and it's basically an organisation that specialises in textile waste collection and recycling, and I'm just wondering at all, I think there was a waste forum in Hobart last week, I'm not sure if any of our staff have attended, but I just wanted to know if there's any kind of movement in the waste area regarding textile waste and knowing that it is a big part of our landfill. So,
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. The Waste Forum was in Launceston, and a number of all the members of the KWS board actually attended that particular meeting, which was good. And it's great to actually see waste moving ahead in the state. So there was attendees from both industry, local government, service authorities, so widespread of people attending it, which is excellent. There was no particular presentations on textiles, but I have been to one not too long ago, which actually did talk about textile waste and actually reprocessing that. There is a number of businesses that actually are in that space. There's also a number of organisations who, have put in a voluntary stewardship scheme associated with textiles, which effectively means that they pay a premium to actually then allow for the textiles to be recycled at the end of life. We have had discussions in the past with various different organisations in terms of textile reuse for our own particular area. It hasn't come to anything at this stage, but we know that it is an issue that sits for the regional group. It has been raised to the regional group in terms of that being one of our waste streams, and was recently raised when we were doing the brainstorming for the strategy for the regional group as well. So it is on the agenda, just nothing definite at this stage.
Any further? Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I was wondering about the proposal for the ferries that is currently being considered by the state government, whether there are any historical studies available from a feasibility study particularly that council undertook historically, and also whether there are any studies available which the state government might have done that might be available to the public.
So in relation to the ferry discussion paper that the government released last Monday, that is has been done within the Department of State Growth. There wasn't any consultation with councils on that. They're now putting it out to for comment, which I assume would include comment from Greater Hobart Mayors as a group, but also individual councils who would like to make submissions in relation to that. So whilst there had been an attempt to have some engagement with the state government over that extension of ferry services, they made it clear that it was their work, and so we've only just become aware of it. So there was no ability to provide anything else towards it. But that one is very much focused on the provision of services under the auspices of transport or Minister for Infrastructure. You may also be aware that there is some work going on separately. The Greater Hobart Mayors have commissioned, which is a report on the viability of infrastructure in different locations around the Derwent River to support an extended ferry service. That is due to be released in, hopefully, the coming months. Councillor Fox.
It's just that I'm aware that there was a feasibility study done a long time ago, probably 15 years ago, by council when this matter was raised before, and I'm just hoping that somebody has a copy of that study.
I'll make sure the General Manager is not aware of it, but
I have asked before. It seems to have vaporised, so that does concern me.
Can I just clarify, was it a study in relation to the infrastructure or the provision of the service?
Both.
Okay.
The feasibility of the actual distance and the time it took and how many passengers would be using it, as well as the physical infrastructure in Kingston and whether it would be able to support it, as well as the proposal for car parking, which was obviously a problem too. Yeah.
We can certainly have a look for it, but certainly from what I've seen, the work that both those groups have done, the infrastructure work that's been done by some consultants on behalf of Greater Hobart Mayors has actually done a thorough assessment on the tidal conditions and so on of all the areas that they looked at, but also the from what I've seen of the document that the government put out last week, they seem to have talked about the viability from a financial point of view and potential number of passengers and travel times, etc. And that's why some sites were ruled out, such as Brighton and further afield, because of the length of time it would take to provide it. But what we're really hoping for now is for those two bodies of work to come together so that we can get the full picture, because at the moment we've got two separate pieces to it and they need to sort of conjoin to look at the overall feasibility.
Thank you.
The Deputy Mayor.
Did we have a question recently about the lids for milk bottles and whether or not they could be recycled? My memory was that we had answered that yes, we could recycle them, but I just wanted to check that.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yes, that's correct.
Okay, because that is contrary to the information that's gone out recently about what can and can't go in the recycle bin. So we need to address that for future.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. If that's the case, I can have a look at it, yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Dean.
Great questions. I've only got two. One is around the dog management policy, just that I note that there was a lot of interest in that from the community and consultation ended last month. So do we have potentially just have a time frame or an update for the community about that?
Yes, so the dog management policy will be coming back to us at the next council meeting on the 4th of December.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Oh, and my other question is around Taruna Channel Highway Runner Place. Residents down there would be very familiar that another vehicle has been stuck on that intersection, and I asked not that long ago if we could get an update from DSG or State Growth, and so I'm wondering if we might have any news around that to try and avoid any future vehicles getting stuck and delaying traffic.
So was it a car or was it a bus?
It was a delivery truck.
Ah, Mr. Reid.
Through you, Mayor, yes, I did receive that from Councillor Dean. So at this stage here, we're just in the process of chasing up state growth as regards that. I guess the smart money's on the fact that state growth, I think about a year ago, actually overlaid the road. So effectively what you've done is actually potentially created an issue there where that may actually happen. So we'll discuss that with them and see what they might see, if there's any options in terms of actually trying to alleviate that.
Councillor Dean.
Thank you.
Mr. Dean, sorry. I didn't demote you then. No. Councillor Dean.
Yeah, thanks. So I guess I'll just make the point that this has been going, these vehicles, buses and delivery trucks have been getting stuck since the 90s. So I take your point that the overlay has definitely probably increased that. We have seen more incidents this year and residents have contacted me more frequently than previously. So I guess, yeah, that's absolutely true. But it would be nice if we didn't just fall back on that as an excuse and we pressed a little bit hard. So that's actually not a question, that's just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. I think that was a statement. Try and phrase it with a question at the end next time and you might get away with it. We are now on page 3, questions on notice and councillors. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice and councillors. And petitions still being actioned, there are no petitions still being actioned. And at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Which takes us to page 4, officers' reports to council, proposed independent planning development assessment panels with a recommendation on page 8. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So tonight we're being asked for our feedback on this idea of DAPs. And I've got a view which the other councillors may or may not agree with, but I'll explain it. I believe that the elected member planning authority should be replaced with DAPs. I believe that the council should retain its, the planning department should retain its delegated authority and make assessments of development applications, and then in the case that there's a recommendation for refusal or there's more than a couple of objections, then it would get referred to a DAP rather than coming to the elected members. And I've got three reasons for that. Firstly, I think we all understand that feeling of not being able to represent the community when we sit as the planning authority. We're asked to take off that hat, so I would ask then, what is the point in having it? I would say that sometimes it feels a little bit like I'm a student being asked to mark the teacher's homework. We've got our expert planners who make their assessment of development applications, and elected members aren't typically expert planners, although I acknowledge that we have Councillor Street in our particular makeup of council. But yeah, for me, I always feel a little bit silly being asked to kind of judge the work that the expert planners have made on a development application. I would also suggest that I think it's a little bit of a waste of time. We've got our expert planners who do a lot of work in assessing development applications. Then they have to go and write a great big report, which is presented to us as elected members. And often that requires just trying to explain the application. And then they have to sit there and cop all of our questions about the application. So I think that elected members do have a role in planning, and for me, the role that the elected members should have comes more in the strategic shaping of communities. I'll start reading because I'm losing my train of thought a little bit. So, by allowing elected representatives, community and council's planners to develop local provisions, desired future character statements and specific area plans. So that was in answer, sorry, to question 3. So to allow DAP determined applications to be informed by local knowledge, how will councils be involved? So my answer to that was by allowing the elected members
alongside with community and the council's planners to develop the local provisions, desired future character statements and specific area plans. So currently there are none of these in our planning scheme, and the laws are weakened by the acceptable solutions and the performance criteria. So by allowing the elected members to do their representing alongside the community, it will help strategically shape our municipalities. So while I'm saying that elected members shouldn't have a role in the planning authority, I think that we do have a really important role in representing the community when it comes to the strategic approach. So going back to the, because we had four questions in the agenda to shape our feedback. So the question to answer, the answer to question one was, like I said, that only those that have been through a council planning department and are recommended for refusal or have more than a couple of representations. In answer to question two, it was no one. I just think we need to follow the process. Question three, I answered, and then there was a question there about timeframes. Just before I went on to question four, I just wanted to also make another point that by suggesting that the DAPs are used, I think that we also need to be standing up for our expert planners. I wonder how the DAPs will actually be selected. It's likely that it will be our expert planners who are selected for these panels, and I am not suggesting that the DAPs would provide better quality of assessment than our own planners. So by saying that I support DAPs, I'm also trying to make the point that I stick up for the council's planning department. So I hope that's kind of clear. For question four, I don't see requests for information as being punitive actions taken by council, simply because they want to be a pain, like it is sometimes suggested. I think RFIs ensure that DAs meet the requirements of the scheme, and so perhaps a suggestion is that there are better pre-lodgement discussions. I'm probably on time. I feel like I'm on time. So that's my answer to that. Thank you.
Thank
Sorry,
you.
I'm a bit lost in there.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I'll head something off at the pass straight away. Not a planning expert, and have never professed to be one. In actual fact, I engage planning experts, but I do spend a fair amount of my time arguing with planners and compliance staff from other councils in relation to these matters and the interpretations of planning schemes and those sorts of things. I agree with the Deputy Mayor to a certain extent. I think that there is a place for development assessment panels and the removal of some decisions from council, especially where we look at it as a council and think that we, as we happens often, really have a huge conflict of interest in terms of our role as a statutory planning authority and our role as community representatives and advocates. And it does happen. It's very difficult to separate those two roles. And so I understand the reason for DAPs, and I agree that they're worth exploring within the parameters that that staff have outlined, and I think their commentary is very sound. The one thing that I will say is this, in relation to the Deputy Mayor's view, I do diverge slightly. I don't agree that there's no place for elected decision-making bodies in planning. It's an area where there is so much discretion and in certain places and so much room for differences of opinion in relation to what an appropriate impact is and what isn't. And a professional planner is always going to have a different view, and you're always going to be able to find another professional planner in most cases with the opposing view. And so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that there is some lay opinion worked into that mix at this point in the decision-making process, noting that's part of the reason that we have an appeal process as well. While I think DAPs have got a place, I still think elected decision-making bodies have a role in and planning matters. That's my view, but like I say, I agree with much of the commentary from staff on the current proposal, and I'm really happy for a response to be provided in line with that commentary.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Next, I've got Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Midgley. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question and then maybe a brief contribution. Point 4.10 on page 7. If someone could explain to me where, in regards to this opt-in, opt-out option, why they consider it that it goes against good governance, effective and good governance. I have a view why, but I'd like to hear that. And then also, it's procedurally very difficult to navigate. Could I get an explanation or a clarification?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor. Thanks for the question. The comments about the opt-in, opt-out and it being ineffective or potentially ineffective is if you had an applicant that just simply doesn't like the answer. So it may be appropriate where they think there's where it's a more complicated application, that it needs additional experts or a state view on it. But if it's Roger putting in a shed and the assessment is that it's not appropriate, just because they don't like the answer may not be the reason to have a DAP. That would probably not be very good use of the DAP's time, state government DAP's time, and it's not what it's for. It's probably better to use for a procedural matter. But that's what the appeal process is set up for as well, if there's questions that the scheme hasn't been followed. So the DAP will follow the same scheme as what the council uses, so the assessment tools are the same. So that's where the opt-in or opt-out. And also because it's unclear in the paper about when that would occur, like does it, you know, do we do all this legwork up until then and then do they opt in that they want to do that, and then that changes the timeframes, and are other neighbouring parties or neighbours or other stakeholders, so the neighbours or other people affected, is that fair and reasonable if it's opt-in, opt-out at some random time but during the process? So I think they haven't worked that out, and that's part of the questions that the state government's asking through the discussion paper. And sorry, what was the second question?
About how it's procedurally difficult to navigate, but I think you've sort of helped me understand that a bit better. If I could have a follow-up question there.
Yes, Councillor.
So this is not in 410, where you talk about some jurisdictions allow applicants to opt in or opt out. That's not at the beginning of the very process where they've got two approval lanes. They can go the council approval or the DAP approval. That's not what those jurisdictions allow.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the jurisdictions that have it, I'm less familiar with. Adrian, who had worked in, or Mr. Stander, who had worked in New South Wales, had worked in that. My understanding from that is it was only for larger applications. There's also an ability in Victoria, where I'd previously worked, where it could be sent to the state government for assessment, but it really was that higher end application, much bigger ones, which is what Tasmania has set up as the major applications process, and it's outlined in the Act if a major application is to go through that, what the procedure is.
So it's fair to say that based on the criterion 4.8, those people have an opt-in, opt-out, or those applicants have an opt-in, opt-out, but not in general. Is that correct view?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, they're suggested by the actual discussion paper.
Yeah.
That's not written by us.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
Yes.
So it's potential that if this is approved and we do go to a DAP system where the criteria in 4.8 is mandated, therefore those applicants in those scenarios would have an opt-in, opt-out.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor. They may do, but that's not what the decision... The decision has been made yet, and that's what the discussion paper's for, so
little
unclear.
No, yeah, I'm just saying, I'm just trying to process it forward. Thank you very much for the explanation. I mean, I suppose my contribution is that I broadly support the paper. I think there's a role to play for DAPs, especially in those really difficult circumstances. I really like the third dot point in 4.8 where it talks about where the applicant considers that there is bias or perceived bias on behalf of the council or councillors. That would I think, cut out a lot of complaints. I don't agree in surrendering our planning authority to DAPs, and so I pretty much echo what Councillor Christian Street said earlier. So I personally would support this proposal based on the way it's written and what it's recommending.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions to start. Just in regards to the DAP panel, what do we see the vision of that, the independent panel, and how independent do we think that would be?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, they haven't outlined that, what we would probably expect. So other states who are better funded in their areas would already have a suite of planners in their state government as a planning group, but that's not afforded here, so they would probably look to appoint new people. They haven't outlined that. It could be a combination of consultants, noting there are a limited number of consultants in Tasmania, and obviously we see repeated consultants, which has its pros and cons with it as well. Perhaps they would look at getting a panel, like nominations from particular councils to be able to represent, but obviously not represent on their own. They may look to employ new people, which no doubt will come from councils, to make up a panel. It's unclear how they're going to do it, and that's certainly a question we would be interested in understanding. And then insofar as independence, obviously the state government has rules and regulations with staffing around independence, but it'd have to be mindful that there is not a bias if it's a state significant or a state interest or a political interest in a project and then they're state-employed people to make the decision. I'm not suggesting that they wouldn't do it accordingly, but they'd have to be mindful about that there isn't a conflict of interest in that.
So I guess what I'm hearing is...
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess what I'm hearing is there's lots to think about in regards to who would make up that assessment panel, and it could be, perhaps, hopefully it would be a transparent and unquestionable decision. And what about, staff's thoughts on... Sorry, just looking at my notes here. So in regards to the community being able to appeal a decision through the planning tribunal, what does that look like if a DAP is in place?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, that's not clear about whether that appeal process is there. There is some commentary in the discussion paper that perhaps it could be like a tribunal in that they're looking at from de novo and take that into account, but then of course that depends on when it occurs in the process, if it's before or after the advertising, and whether there's further appeal rights after that.
Thank you. And I echo sentiments from other councillors in regards to the hat we wear as our councillor and the hat we wear as a planning authority, and the process and expertise that we look to when we're assessing such matters that come forward to us. But I'm aware that the broader kind of impetus of this is really looking at the proposal to remove council as a planning authority, and I don't support that. I think for transparency, independence and public participation in decision making, it's critical for a healthy democracy that those decisions stay within council. And I'd like to recommend that we continue with normal council processes and we don't wish it to be done by planning assessment panels, that we support the process of the right for the community to appeal the final decision to the planning tribunal. So it doesn't seem that's really clear, so I really take a stance that we have that right for the community to appeal. And I guess what we have seen in that appeal process, we have seen some positive outcomes. Of course, it's a difficult and emotive thing for community members to be involved in, but we have seen some good outcomes along that way, and I just worry that this... going in this DAP framework wouldn't have that sort of opportunity for community members. But I'm happy to hear from staff in regards to some further information regarding their view on that. Through you, Mayor.
I didn't quite hear a
so
question.
In,
from
so, in regards to.
She didn't either, she didn't rush to put a light on.
Sorry.
What's the question?
So, I guess it's in regards to. So, the question I asked about the community appeal and the DAP process. So, if then, like, I guess the ability for then community to be able to appeal if the DAP process is in place, like, what are the pros and cons around that?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the discussion paper's not clear on what the appeal process would be. And as mentioned, it would be relevant when they opt in, opt out, and whether they go through the same advertising process, public notification process. It would probably be better with someone with a legal background to make comment about whether there's fairness if that was taken away. On the spot, I couldn't come up with the answer because certainly there are tribunals set up throughout Australia and other appeal mechanisms for that reason of procedural fairness and an opportunity for people to be part of that process, and it's been decided that planning is one of those processes that does have a lot of public input, so there could be impacts on that.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. So in regards to, I guess I'm interested as well to hear from staff through you, Mayor, just in regards to the fact that when we hear sort of from information from, say, Planning Matters Alliance Tasmania, who are a group of committed people advocating for good planning process and outcomes, you know, that they have emailed a lot of councillors today and councils around the state saying that, you know, this would have the following, like, a number of implications, basically, for councils in regards to community's voice for decision-making within our local council area, that it's done by, you know, we don't know who's going to be on the panel, we don't know about the rights of appeal, and I guess taking that right to democracy and things like that. So I'm wondering, through you, Mayor, you know, what's staff's sort of thoughts around it actually taking it away from that community process and the biggest implications, I guess, in taking it away from council decision-making and going to a panel?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, it just is important to remember that they're not suggesting that the DAP would take away all decisions from council. I'm not saying that's what you suggested, but just for anyone listening, it's not taking away all of them. It's talking about those from the elected members. Is the community part of that? Again, it depends on where in the process they opt in or opt out, and if they do the public notification process the same way, and if they allow the appeals to occur. I guess something that is probably of mind is that councillors then don't have that opportunity to hear from the community and express that in the chamber, but that in itself is probably an example of where there is potential conflict of interest. So if councillors cite things like, he's a good bloke, they've had a hard time, they're really nice, they're all absolutely inappropriate decision-making, which does occur from time to time. Or I've heard about them and they've worked really hard to set up a business and we should support local businesses. Again, that's something that would be a conflict of interest, and I guess that's some of the conflict of interest that the discussion paper is talking about. But perhaps an alternative, if they weren't to do the DAP, is to have stronger rules or reinforced rules or something to that effect for councillors, that if they're going outside those lines and they are presenting a conflict of interest, then there should be some ramification for that or tightening up of that or education of elected members. So there's some different options that they do have that already in place about the conflict of interest. And certainly as officers, we try to make it clear when that line has been crossed within the limitation of only being able to speak when spoken to. So we do try to provide that guidance so that they don't go off on tangents or decisions made about other matters that aren't strictly a planning matter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, I had Councillor Fox and then Councillor Dean.
Thank you, Mayor. I support Councillor Street and Councillor Midgley, and I wish I could speak as eloquently as they do. But I do feel a lot of planning matters that come to council are very open to interpretation, and also the councillors sitting around the table provide local knowledge, which may not be the case if the matter was considered by an outside body. It's our opportunity to represent our community, and it's a really important democratic process that we are involved. On page, well, section 4.8, the position paper is seeking our feedback on these points, and I feel that most of them are missing the point, basically. When we get applications for social or affordable housing, I don't think that is relevant to the planning scheme, so why include that as a reason to take it out? And also, I think it's very negative because the community may well welcome that. When they talk about point two, critical infrastructure, well, who's going to maintain that infrastructure if not council? So why shouldn't we have a say in the matter? Also, TAS Water has an input already, so if it involves sewage or water, then that's already covered in our planning considerations. Where planning, the council is the applicant and the decision maker, they still need to have the planning scheme at heart and comply with that planning scheme, otherwise we cannot approve it. And it rarely occurs that councillors express a conflict of interest and there is no quorum to make that. As long as I've been on council, 35 years plus, that has not happened in this council, perhaps in smaller councils, but I don't think that happens very often. being at odds with the constituents' views, well, that is what we're elected for, and the views are expressed to us by the community and we take them into account. So I don't really understand why that is an issue. Where an applicant considers there is bias or perceived bias, well, the same bias could occur with any group that's considering that, and that's also politics to take that away from the democratic process and pass it on to another body. And where the complex applications, where the council may not have access to appropriate skills or resources, well, then the developer should provide that information and it should be at their cost. So that's not really relevant because that would happen in both cases. And applications over a certain value, if the government wants to call that in, they already do. So there's no reason to change what's going on at the moment. I do find it all a bit challenging, and I do think it's important that we state our case that planning stays with council and that we are doing a good job as a council, that most of the applications that come to us are passed, there are no problems with this council, and I think that if it ain't broke, why fix it? Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Dean.
I guess I have a question because I'm kind of hearing a range of views amongst other councillors, from we need to only have development assessment panels to definitely no development assessment panels. And so at the back of my mind, I'm just wondering, given that what we're actually discussing here is a recommendation to delegate power to the general manager to provide feedback, I'm very kind of intrigued as to how he might navigate this now that we clearly have a range of opinions in the room. So that's probably my first question.
The General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Councillor Dean. That's a very good question. while the conversation's been going on, I've been turning my mind to that. But given the way the recommendation reads in Part B, it does say to respond to the position paper as outlined in this report. And the report that's referred to is the report that's on the agenda.
Which is my thinking. I guess my if I could just go back to the report then, as you've said, what the report to me reads is if, on the one hand, we don't think, as Councillor Fox says, that the system is broke and that there's probably not a place for these. So would I then gauge that the report reads that we are not in support of development assessment panels?
Do you want to answer?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. I don't see that specifically referred to in the report that's on the agenda. Councillor Dean, is the answer to your question?
Okay. Can I have follow-up questions?
Yes, Councillor Dean.
So it says here 10.3, the Tasmanian planning system already provides independent assessment pathways to deal with complex applications, and it's not clear why another assessment layer should be added to a system that is already constrained in terms of resources. And what I'm reading there is that we don't really support it because it would be expensive, quote, and could potentially lead to unnecessary extensions in processing timeframes. So that does sound somewhat like a position. Could I clarify?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. It certainly does sound like a position, but I think the point the author is trying to make is that greater clarity is required. And I think that's the point that I'm picking up from many of the councillors' comments this evening, Councillor Dean.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree. I think the questions that councillors have put forward have been great, and the responses have probably showed that there's a bit of detail lacking in the position paper. And when I read it, I probably had some questions too about exactly as what staff have pointed out, that does seem to be some detail lacking. So I find that we're in a peculiar position actually right now, and that we have to provide feedback, and the report here does seem a little open-ended, whether that is agreed upon by the General Manager or not. I guess from my own view, I do echo Councillor Street and others' comments in terms of, you know, there may be some place for these. And I also, again, would disagree with Councillor Fox in that applications for social and affordable housing are, for me, the number one priority here, because we've seen in years gone past where, while there are communities that have welcomed social and affordable housing, we've seen, unfortunately, time and again, applications from providers such as Centrecare go through the rounds and get delayed and cost non-for-profit organisations far too much money because of certain local people that don't want social and affordable housing near them, but ultimately the provider wins out, and it's just those people that, because of a delayed project, those people are the ones missing out. So I do disagree with Councillor Fox, and I guess that's another point of where I think there's just some really mixed views in the room. And so I just probably make the point that I don't envy you in writing a response on the basis of the comments tonight. And I guess that the time is somewhat of the essence here, because we need to provide a response, and absolutely agree with that. But I would be very interested to read and be copied into the correspondence that goes back to the state government. Thank you.
Any further? Councillor Midgley, with a question.
I do have a question, yes. Just noting that we've had discussions around different position papers before, I think the housing statement and things like that, and when during the discussion staff have taken on councillors' comments and questions and then input that into the submission. Mm-hmm. So the reason why I seconded it really, and I'm coming to a question, the reason why I seconded it was because having that sort of framework of understanding that things can change and go along the way. So I guess, is it, when I make that statement that, you know, Councillor Fox also has, you know, adhered to, that we would like to see that planning stays within the council jurisdiction decision making, if I am then supporting this report, is that statement correct, that we would like to support that planning stays within council?
Well, that is the majority of what I'm hearing, and I guess it depends on the outcome of this vote, but that is effectively the thrust of what is in the paper. And it as is. The General Manager said, the recommendation is that, that the submission cover what is in the paper. I've got no doubt that staff have heard some of the comments that have been made, but essentially the thrust of what's in the paper is that the decision making should stay with councils.
Great. Just wanted to check that before I decide on my vote. Thank you.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions. In relation to 10.3 under the summary there, where it talks about the proposed framework would be expensive and could potentially lead to unnecessary extensions in processing timeframes. Interested for some examples on where these extensions in the processing timeframes may occur.
So before I throw to Ms Tyler Moore, just to let you know that the Local Government Association has done some work on this, and they estimate that, because obviously we have a 42-day timeframe at the moment, they estimate that the new process that they've mapped out, as far as you can tell from what's been provided in the discussion paper, could take 105 days. So any suggestion by the government that this is actually going to result in DAs going through quicker is quite false if you look at that mapping. But Ms Tyler Moore, did you want to add anything to that?
Yes, Mayor, I just wanted to add these. So without knowing the full process, and that's why we're asking, I think it's important to understand that when we answer these requests for an opinion from council, that it's often included. We give an opinion as has been outlined by Councillor Midgley, but always mindful to say, but if you're going to go down it, then please consider these things. And that's where some of these points come in. So the expenses may be that, is there going to be a fee that you have to pay to go to the panel? I mean, it seems unusual that you get to have a whole panel of state government staff assessing an application without any fees, so there'll be more fees there. If they decide that they need further information, will they ask for reports? Do they get to, if it wasn't asked by the council, they think it's necessary? The discussions paper itself outlines timeframes. I had to smile when I saw that the state government needed more days than we need, because they keep cutting down our days to make decisions, but they need more days, so aren't they lucky to get that? So that could be another one. But it'll also depend when it occurs in the process. Like Councillor Antolli was talking about, you know, what stage it happens. Are they going to change the timeframes, and will it take them longer? How many staff are they going to have? How many applications? And again, it comes down to the question of, if you're just unhappy with council's application, you know, so we get 400 applications a year, 100 of ours at Kingborough alone go in, how many are they going to deal with all the other councils? Mm-hmm. So that will slow it down and also potentially create further costs. And the DAPs may very well not have the experts that we have. We're fortunate. We have our own engineers. We have our own environmental planners. Sometimes there's fields that we're not familiar with. We do need to get experts. But is the state government really going to have on this DAP panel those experts as well? So is that going to be more costly that they're going to spend on that, or are they going to put it back on the applicant? So there's a few questions because it hasn't been decided yet.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I think on the whole I agree with most of the other councillors that have spoken, that there is some criteria where it makes more sense for an independent DAP panel to make the decision. But the key is that council need to also be able to have some say as well. And I think the main one I agree with is 10.5 in the report that says the statutory process for public engagement and input on development proposals should be retained. I think that's a must regardless of which way it goes. So I can also see where Councillor Dean thinks there's a bit of conflict between 10.3 and 10.4 in terms of one saying it's maybe not a good way to go, and 10.4 saying if we do go that way, then some suggestions. But also taking on board what's been said, that this is, we need the input from the experts, so that's what we've got. So I look forward to reading the letter from the General Manager.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. I just want to ask a question regarding a application coming to council, which is largely made up of people who don't have planning qualifications, versus going to a DAP, which you'd assume would be made up of peer groups. Would the approach from council to send an application to a DAP be different to that of it coming to council?
I don't think I understand your question, but I'm hoping Ms Tyler Moore does, but I'd say by the look on her face she doesn't.
If an application or a report is coming to council for a decision, is the way that is written and approached going to be different coming to a group of unqualified in planning people, as opposed to a group of peers?
Are you referring to us as the uneducated ones?
Yes.
Right, just checking.
through you, Mayor, the
Unqualified, I think, was the word you're looking for.
I think I said that second.
It's likely that we would write the report in the same way. We're very conscious when we write our reports. We've got many stakeholders because it's the residents who may be lay people, and it may be also the technical people. So we would still have a lot of the specific references to the planning scheme because that's what we have to do, but we also make it clear. So is there a big change from the officer's workload if it comes to a council or if it goes to the DAP? Probably not, if that's what the question was, because we still need to write it for the public, we still need to write it for the experts, we still need to cover all the parts of the planning scheme. And the council reports, in fact, aren't that different from our day-to-day reports, because we need to include it. We do provide a little bit more explanation if it comes to a council meeting and a bit more background, but they're not that indifferent.
Councillor Richardson.
Yeah, OK.
Councillor Midgley with another question.
Thank you. I'm just trying to understand this DAP. So could the minister say Koonunga, the cable car, or, I don't know, high-rise buildings in Hobart or the Skylands development sort of thing, could the minister then decide that that will be taken away from the planning authority and council and moved to a DAP? How do we... I need to understand that, what that might
Ms.
look like.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the minister can do that now under major projects. There are certain criteria that need to be met to be major projects. If you recall, recently we had a paper before the chamber about the one on the Eastern Shore, Kangaroo Bay, where they were trying to say it was a major project, and all the councillors replied and said it's not, so it didn't qualify. And so certainly the cable car could have qualified for that, the new stadium potentially. But not Rogers Shed, wouldn't qualify for that.
Unless it was a grand shed.
Unless it was a really significant shed.
So if there are no other contributions, because I think everyone's actually spoken, so I'll just make a couple of comments. I do feel like this has... this is overreach on the part of the government. I think it is trying to solve a very small number of cases where I think there are one or two councils where sometimes their decisions have been politicised. Even their own discussion paper admits that it is a very small proportion of the total number of development applications that are assessed by planning authorities every year. I think that that approach then is really kind of using a sledgehammer to fix a tack. There are a lot of question marks over the discussion paper that kind of says to me this has been quite rushed and they don't really know how it would look like, and they're asking everyone else now to provide some commentary and some suggestions as to how it might work if it's brought in. That to me is not sound public policy making. A couple of things that did alarm me about it is that my understanding of it is that the planning minister at any time under these would be able to take a development out of the hands of a planning authority. And midway through the development assessment, if the developer doesn't like the way it's heading. So imagine somebody coming and lodging a development application, they get halfway through the process with us, then the developer doesn't like the way it's going because they might think, oh, it's going to be refused. Then they can make an application to the minister for it to go off to this new to the new panel for assessment. That, to me, seems like a very unwieldy process. I think the criteria are very, very wide that they've got here in relation to the number of DAs that could be taken out of the planning authority's hand. I do have some sympathy for the question of the social housing being taken out because of the issues we know we've had and other municipalities have had where... unfortunately, and quite wrongly in my view, and I'm sure others would feel the same, where we do have people who have that, not in my backyard, I don't want to live near social housing. And we've had that discussion here a number of times when we've had applications before us where we've heard that from people. And in fact, we even heard it from some people when we were doing the when we agreed to provide the land to the Hobart Women's Shelter, and we discussed the disposal of that, and some people said we don't want crisis accommodation near our private property. So I do believe that there is perhaps a role for that, but given we're in a housing crisis and the significantly longer time frame it looks like this process will take of the DAPs compared to our own, it concerns me that whilst it may solve that one problem of local communities and putting pressure on councillors to knock off social housing or delay it or change it, versus the delays that could happen under the DAP system, given the dire need for urgent social housing, I'd want to be pretty sure if they did do it that it was faster than the 105 days that LGAT has mapped it. I think just one final comment. I think that it's quite important to remember the overall in Tasmania. I mean, we have around 400 applications just here at Kingborough Council every year. You know, we are one of the larger ones. If you look at the figures that were in the paper on the weekend about some of the southern municipalities and the numbers that we deal with, and you add all of those up around 29 councils, only 1% of decisions made by planning authorities every year are appealed and go to the tribunal. 1%. So we're not seeing a huge problem in terms of the decision-making being made by planning authorities. And, you know, if we look, and I know from time to time we get information about from our staff about decisions that we've made as a planning authority that then go on to be appealed, and then we quite often will get the outcome and it turns out, you know, we were right and the appeal was dismissed. So it is a it's a complex system, but I don't think it's broken and I don't think we need a sledgehammer, and I think we're just going to the state government will confuse people even more if they go down this path. So look, I thank everybody for their contributions, and I'm sure Ms. Tyler Moore will take on board the comments, because it is a bit of a sort of, you know, like hearing the majority, people are saying, no, we don't want this, but then there is that, you know, well, if we have to have it, here are some suggestions. And I think that's, you know, that's proactive on our part as a council and certainly something that they're asking us to do. So having said that, Councillor Gladright, did you want to sum up? No? All right, I'm going to put the recommendation as printed in the agenda and on the screen. It was moved by Councillor Gladright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. We now move on to page 11, another one where we get to make a submission to the state government, this time in relation to the draft fire and emergency services, I'm going to call it tax, with a recommendation on page 15. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Oh, sorry, Councillor Dean, and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Dean.
I think you've already fairly summarised that we are here to approve principles for a submission on the draft fire and emergency services bill.
That will be
presented to the state government, despite them being on the record that they're going back to the drawing board. I still think it's worth that we put our feedback in. Just to say that the report, I think, is well written. It clearly shows the impact on ratepayers, whether it's residential or commercial ratepayers in Kingborough. It highlights also some of the critical issues, I suppose, from an implementation perspective. Risk that these taxes will be seen as a council charge is one of those. That it remains unclear how much council would receive the levy for collecting those taxes, as well as the issues around annual assessed value versus capital value and software implications, etc. So, as I've said, I think the report and recommendation I'm fully supportive of, and I'm glad that we're putting this feedback in, and look forward to the government going back to the drawing board and coming up with hopefully a more palatable response that, whether it's business groups, property council groups, residential property owners, commercial property owners, that we can get something that ticks all the boxes, and so that we can actually, which is critical, fund our rural and city fire brigades as best as we possibly can. So I am happy to remove the report.
Thank you very much. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I will make a brief contribution. I agree with the sentiment that Councillor Dean just shared. It is a burden for the government to try and find a way to finance these incredibly important services to our community, but the bill shock that the members of our community would get if we as the council become the intermediary tax collector is beyond anything I could want to happen. I know that we'll get blamed for it and not them. They will look at the bill and they'll say, "Council, you are destroying my business." And then no matter how much you tell them, it's beyond our control. Our hands are tied. And then they'll see that we get a fee for it, and that fee will go up for us. So we'll get tarnished with that just because of the 4% flat fee. So I commend the minister for his good sense of going back and to community consultation. I know him personally. I know that he's a decent fellow family man, but I really wish that this had been done in consultation first before actually going to a draft bill. So I support the report.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Councillor Street.
I almost entirely agree with everything that has been said so far. The only thing that I'll add is this. At some stage, the community is going to have to grapple with the question of how to properly and adequately fund fire and emergency services. I'm not suggesting that this was the right way, but this is a question that we absolutely need to grapple, and not everybody is going to be happy with the outcome. I have no doubt of that, about that, but if we don't fix the problem and if the government doesn't fix the problem, then we're going to have serious problems in an environment where we are only seeing worse and worse natural disasters.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Any further discussion? I'll just briefly, look, I think this is a very good discussion paper. It does seem odd to me that the government has gone back to the drawing board with this, but we're still expected to respond to the initial proposal. So it feels a bit like a Clayton submission because they've already accepted they've got it wrong, but we have to still write and tell them that they've got it wrong. Okay. Maybe they are hoping. We're not going to solve this one problem, this problem for them, but I do share the concerns that Councillor Antoli raised about the fact that if this goes ahead in any form that's like this, we are going to be the ones who are going to cop the blame for this. And, you know, we talk often about council being the closest layer of government to the people. We're also the most accessible, and it's going to be a lot of fun going to the supermarket if this goes through and having people stop and having to have the conversation repeatedly that this is not our doing. So I do hope that common sense is going to prevail. We do need a sound funding system for our emergency services, and particularly for the SES, which has struggled for a long time and which we know because of more natural disasters and things that they are being called on more regularly than previously. So there does need to be something fundamentally changed in the system. This hasn't been the way to do it. So let's hope that they do go back to the drawing board and come up with something something better. If there are no more contributions, Councillor Dean, did you want to sum up? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's as printed on page 15. It was moved by Councillor Dean and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 16, community grants, with the recommendation on page 17. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley, seconder in Councillor Bain. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm more than happy to support this one, noting that we had the community grant applications come to us at the last council meeting and we saw a range of applicants that were not eligible due to the fact that we had that policy in place stating that they couldn't apply for an event for a few years in a row. So I think this is a really nice, quick kind of fix just by changing or adding the word generally. And although it perhaps my only comment on this is really that
it, you know, some of the applicants are looking for a bit more money than what's available in the quick response grants, but noting we are midway through a budget cycle and midway through kind of a grants process and things like that, I really like that we've been able to meet some sort of support, and that hopefully these applicants can then apply and look at $1,000 towards their events to enable them to occur. I know that one community organisation would definitely appreciate this, and it would cover them being able to do their grant process. And then hopefully in the new year we can look at a discussion paper that actually, you know, looks at how we fund continual events and things like that. So I'm happy to support this one. I hope we can get that across council as well.
Thank you. Councillor Bain, and then Councillor Antoli after that.
Echo Councillor Midgley's contribution, and I'd like to thank the staff for turning this around so quickly so that we can get this outcome for the community groups who are looking for the funding. Just one question, I guess, is I think in the report it talks about three of the groups would have been approved had this been in place, but there's a couple of groups who didn't apply because of the criteria. Will staff get in touch with those groups that didn't apply and make them aware of this?
Ms. Salisbury.
Through you, Mayor, yes, it's our intention to contact the couple that we knew about and let them know. And there may well be others, people who read the criteria and decided not to apply, which is why we think limiting it to $1,000, you know, for this year until we can sort of have a budget that's commensurate with allowing people to apply repeatedly.
Excellent. Great result.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. Likewise, fully support it, and congratulations to the staff for getting this out there. It's very practical, and my view is that when we come to budget discussion time, I'd love to see this doubled as a grant. I think it's in the current situation, I think that we need to lift our... someone just coughed, did they? We just need to... I think it's worth doubling. I think it's a great... I'm talking about the allocation amount from 30 to 60, but that's a discussion for another day.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. I can see that our new director has written down that suggestion in large letters. Councillor Dean.
Yeah, super supportive of what everyone's already said. I only had two dot points when I was taking notes here. One of them was Councillor Bain's question, which is great to hear the response on that. And the other point was only that 2.2, there was a typo that we didn't consider this in the 6th of December. It was the 6th of November, if there's any confusion around that.
Thank you very much. Sometimes the year goes pretty fast. Any other contributions? I'll just very quickly echo the comments and say thank you to Ms. Salisbury for getting this through very quickly. And I do think it's worth... I'm glad to see we're going to have a further discussion about how we might move forward with this, because as I indicated when we talked about this at the last meeting, I think for some of those events it can take 3 years to become sustainable, get that sponsorship. So, you know, how we sort of ever landed on just 1 year probably wasn't great. So I'd like to consider that we actually do look at 3 years, because it's a lot of work trying to get events up and running, and sponsorship is getting really, really hard in the climate we're in at the moment to secure. So, you know, I'd like to think that there's something that we can look at there. So thank you very much. Happy to support this, and I hope that that satisfies some of the those wonderful events that did apply that otherwise would have missed out, and hope to see them return for next year. Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up? Okay, so I'm going to put the motion. It is moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Go now to page 19, annual report for 2022-23. Looking for a mover, Councillor Dean, a seconder, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Dean.
Yeah, I'd just like to move a slightly amended recommendation.
Sure.
That only tacks on an additional clause to that recommendation that reads, the Council endorsed the attached annual report 2022-23 and therefore adds and removes pages 4 to 5.
Yep.
Yep.
Thank you.
To enable the review and consultation to occur prior to consideration of the 23-24 annual report. Just to say that this is a...
Sorry, before you go on, I just need to ask Councillor Midgley, who seconded it, if she's comfortable with that. Yep, thank you. For the record, can you say yes?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Councillor Dean.
Apologies. Look, it's a hugely insightful document, super useful for anyone that's interested in council activities, whether it's our programs, capital bids, staffing. There's a whole range of great projects that has been going on that this details. It's a fantastic document. It says also as part of this report that 7.1, that the annual report will be published on our website and that members of the public will be invited to make submissions on the report for discussion at the AGM, which is going to be held next Saturday. Good plug there as well. And the only last thing I would say is that obviously I've added in an adjusted recommendation, and that's just simply so that we can have a look at those couple of pages and see if we can't give it a bit of a refresh and update going into next year. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just thinking about stopping and seeing people at the supermarket, people, you know, community members stopping you at the supermarket, which does happen a lot when you go to Hill Street. I'm there for a quick milk and it ends up being a lot more conversation. I was thinking I might carry the annual report in one of my shopping bags, you know. Anyway, but really, the annual report just gives, and I thank staff so much for putting this together because it is a lot of effort and the pictures and everything are so wonderful as well that really tell the story of the great work we do across our municipality. But it really highlights the fact that council is more than rates, roads and rubbish. It really highlights the great areas across council, and I like as well like the stats around our growing population. It's so great to include that as well because we can see the different age demographics, how much we've actually grown, and understanding the kind of growing pains that we have across that as well. But really, the stats on the... I won't highlight every single area, but a few things that stood out to me was just, on page 63, like the engagement stats, just showing the diversity of the different engagement projects that we have done across council. And I think if we were to look for past annual reports to where we are now, due to the socials and so much more technology around engaging, we can probably see that real growth in the amount of people that have engaged in a number of projects over our time. And page 50 as well, and again, not saying highlighting this over anything else, but they were just some snapshots, really just the area and our climate and the work that we've done in that space as well. And I guess we had talked about a bit of a climate report card, and I kind of see that information on page 50 as being a bit of a climate report card. And I hope that, we can take some more snippets, and I think we do on our different socials and the way that we share different information. We take snippets of what's available in this annual report and share that across different community areas as well and on our social media and stats like that. But you can just have a look, flick through and look at the pictures really and see the pictures tell the story of the amazing work that we have done across the municipality. And it highlights the community where the rates go, and our rates go to a fantastic breadth of projects. And just congratulations to all, and thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Councillor Midgley, any further discussion? Councillor Gladrat.
Yeah, thank you. I'd just like to echo the contributions of Councillor Midgley. It's so great to read about all the achievements, and I congratulate everyone's efforts. It's also really great to see the strategies explained so clearly for the year ahead, and I think everyone should be really proud of how well Kingborough Council is functioning. And I would also just like to thank Councillor Dean for bringing the amendment. The email that you sent this afternoon explaining your amendment was very impressive, and I just thank you very much for bringing that to Council as well.
If there's no further comments, just before I ask the mover and mover if they want to sum up, I just wanted to make a comment. I just echo everyone else's thanks to the staff who have worked hard on this, particularly Mrs. Morton, who gets all the information from all the different areas and puts it all together and makes it all look very appealing for people to read. My only concern with it, and I have this about a lot of documents, is that quite often they're not written in the most plain language that we possibly can write them in. And if you read my report from the LGAT conference, I attended a workshop session on from the presenters of 2610, which is the increase group that's been funded by the government to increase literacy skills, but it's also they have a target of getting businesses and government departments and other entities to write in clearer English because the level of literacy in Tasmania is unfortunately not as high as in other parts of the country, and so we need to write accordingly. And I know it's really difficult when you're a subject expert in a particular area of technical skills to try and write without using technical jargon. But it was interesting. This was a very practical workshop that I attended, and it was when you are given some guidelines as to how to do it, it can be achieved. Even for the most technical of sentences, you can boil it down to what it needs to say without confusing people. So the general manager and I have had a discussion, and there's going to be some 26 training that we're going to, it's free of charge, available to all councils and all businesses, and so we're going to arrange for some workshops to be held on that in the new year, because I'd really like to see, as Councillor Midgley said, we have such great stories to tell through this annual report, and it paints a picture of the diversity of what we do in all parts of our community, and I want to make sure that we're telling those stories in a way that as many people as possible can understand them. So I started on this one to, when I was travelling back from that conference actually, I started to reword some of the stuff, and then it was such a huge task I gave up because we had such short time frames, but hopefully we can do it across the organisation in the coming year and get that message out even more clearly so that our community can perhaps get that fuller picture of what we do. So thank you. Councillor Dean, did you want to sum up?
Only just to say thank you for the additional comments, and I probably should leave Councillor Midgley to move these in the future because you did a fantastic job, much better than I could have. That was fantastic. Thank you.
Oh, should we have a warm hug now? Thank you. I'm going to put the recommendation as printed on page 20 of the agenda. It was moved by Councillor Dean and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to item 15.5, the financial report for October 2023 with a recommendation on page 184. I'm looking for a mover and a second. I've got a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So before us we have the financial report October 2023. The forecast result for 23-24 remains at an underlying deficit of $688,000. So there's been no movement there from last month. The main contributing factor to the forecast deficit is still the depreciation impacts of infrastructure asset revaluations, which are forecasting to be $950,000 over budget at the end of the financial year. One of the items that tweaked my interest was the year-to-date. We also have the statutory fees and fines, $143,000 under budget, and that's mainly due to the reduced planning applications, leading to planning income being $114,000 under budget. So I just have a question here, and it relates to the table on page 192, which is the summary operating statement. I noticed here that for this item, for the statutory fees and fines, we're forecasting to finish on budget at the end of the financial year, which I guess to me sounds a little bit optimistic given that we're already $143,000 under budget. So to think that we're going to be all square by the end of financial year might be optimistic, but is there any reason why that would be the case?
Mr. Spinks.
Thank you for the question. I think probably my best response to that is, I should have written that in the report, is that next month we'll be bringing forward a budget review. Now, I know that's primarily centred around the capital budget, and Mr. Reeve and his team will be considering whether the capital budgets need an adjustment, but I think it's also appropriate we take the opportunity to look at the operating budget. I mean, we do provide the end-of-year forecast in every month, but I think if we're going to do the capital budget, I think it makes sense to have a bit of a deeper dive into the operating budget, and I think that would be one we'll need to look at.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you. The other question I had relates to... Just find it. It's in the discussion, and it's the profit on sale of assets is $233,000 over budget, with $176,000 relating to the income from the revenue share agreement on the sale of the first stage in Kingston Park. I guess my question here is the $176,000 over budget, is that because there's zero budget there to start with, so we've made $176,000 so far?
Mr. Spicks.
Through you, Mayor, yes, that's correct. So this is the revenue share arrangement with the Kingston Park sales, and it hasn't been budgeted for, so the $176,000 is a windfall gain, you might say.
Yep. Councillor Bain.
And just a follow-up question, am I correct in saying that that $176,000 is essentially quarantined to pay off debt moving forward, so it won't be used as a balancing line for the rest of the financial year budget?
Mr. Spinks.
Yes, that is my understanding. Yep. I'm getting a nod from the General Manager, so yes.
That's good.
The record reflect the General Manager is nodding vigorously.
Great, thank you.
Any further discussion? No? I take it you don't want to sum up, Councillor Bain. I'll put the recommendation is that Council endorse the attached financial report as at 31st of October 2023. Moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried. Takes us to appendices on page 205. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover in Councillor Gladewright because her hand twitched, and a seconder in Councillor Midgley.
So moved.
Any questions? No? Okay. I'll put the motion then. The appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried unanimously. Takes us still on page 205, notices of motion. Councillor Richardson submitted a notice of motion headed by local procurement and tendering policy, and there was an officer response from Mr. Reeves. So I've got a mover in Councillor Richardson. Do I have a seconder? Seconded Councillor Antoli. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. This is a fairly straightforward motion to include or to develop a buy local policy in line with state government policies, in line with a lot of other businesses that do this. Generally, it's generally a good thing for us as a council to be able to preference local businesses rather than mainland or out of town businesses for the work that we. The work that we do, the jobs that we commission. I note the officer response saying that we are going through, or we are likely to go through, a process of reviewing the overall tendering policy in February. Whilst it's disappointing that that's the first time that I've been made aware of that in the discussions that we've had around this buy local policy, I still think it's worthwhile going through with this development of a motion, development of the policy. As this can form the basis for and part of the tender and contracts policy that shall be reviewed. So,
thank you, Councillor Richardson. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. This matter has been raised in the past, and it led to more concerns than it led to. Happy feelings, basically. I understand that the definition of local isn't really explained. Like, a lot of businesses in Tasmania are local businesses, but they may employ people from other areas. And a lot of people who work in our local business might not live in Kingborough. They might live in other areas. So how do we define what is a local business? Whether it's a southern Tasmanian or a northern Tasmanian. And if we start playing that game, the northerners will start excluding our businesses. So it's a double-edged sword, basically. A lot of our decisions on tenders are based on a whole range of criteria which are weighted, and I haven't looked at the actual details precisely, but I know they include experience, availability, local knowledge, and value for money, and value to the community. So to add local to that as an overrider could actually generate a monopolistic situation for the local businesses, who might come in at a higher amount without experience, without employing local people, and we are going to favour them. So I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think it's in the interest of the community, not in the best interest of the community. I'd be... I know that we have had local businesses here in Kingborough which were often in the mix and were chosen. Other times they weren't because they didn't come in at the right price, or they were otherwise engaged and we'd wait too long for them to be available. So I just feel we have to be very careful how we deal with this. I'd be very interested to hear what other councillors have to say, and I'd be really interested to see a report from staff. But in principle, I'm not in favour of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. The reason why I want to support this, I think it's the first sentence in the background that says, recognising that the community is at the heart of everything we do, supporting the local economic and community benefits associated with this policy aims to align what we say with what we do. And it does say in key point one that we are to the policy should prioritise procurement from businesses operating within Kingborough. And given that these businesses operate within Kingborough, they're paying rates to Kingborough at commercial rates, and it would be nice to support them in doing so. So I'm not really worried about whether or not a business in where the Devonport Council is going to counter us and have a little bit of a war against us. I think we've got enough businesses down here to choose from to not really worry about that. And I think it's great to actually look at a weighting being added to our procurement process that does look at the price, that does say, hey, local business, just because you're 10 times the price, don't think you're going to get the business. It doesn't work that way. They've still got to be competitive. But on balance, let's say we have three businesses that are similar price and one of them is local, and we've had a discussion about this in the past in closed session. Why wouldn't you prioritise a business over a small difference? Giving back to our own community, the community that feeds us, the community that pays the rates to us, the community that actually pays our salaries as councillors and the salaries of the staff through the rates that they give. Let's be a blessing unto them. I think it's a great idea, and I think it can be done well, and it's done pretty much all over Australia.
Thank you, Councillor Antoli. Any further contributions? Councillor Dean.
Only to say that I support the idea 100% of looking into it. I wonder, though, if I could ask a question, whether there might be an interim step rather than jumping to, I guess, the recommendation or it's calling for a policy to be developed, whether an interim step might be something like we do get a report like Councillor Fox has put to us, just because Councillor Ridgeson is clearly far more in tune with this space than I am. And I would like just to be a little bit more fleshed out. And so I wonder, I guess I can't really ask Councillor Richardson a question, can I? But maybe staff could maybe provide their input in terms of whether an interim step through amendment might be possible in this case.
Mr. Spinks, can you help us with that? No, Mr. Reeve, there you go.
Three, Mayor. I don't want to cut Mr. Spink's lunch, but that's
two Davids,
okay.
I mean,
it gets very confusing, I know. Look, we would have some commentary to make about this particular idea. There's a number of different organisations that have gone down the track of looking at local buy, bearing in mind that I guess this particular motion talks about the Tasmanian Government. The Tasmanian Government one has obviously got a bigger pool in terms of right across the state. It's a little bit more difficult when you get to a smaller pool, which we have in Kingborough. So there is a few things we would have to address in terms of that side of things there, particularly with the limited contractors that we actually have available at the moment. But it would be make sense to actually put that forward as a report. The recommendation from the officer was to consider it as a larger type issue with the rest of the procurement policy, which is due for review in February, which in that case will come back to council anyway, which would then give the opportunity to actually address this particular matter in full and provide all the, I guess, all the risks or the potential impacts associated with actually going down that track. I've certainly myself been under a particular system that did have a preference towards local buy, so I am aware of some of the pitfalls, but also some of the other bonuses that go with it as well at the same time. So that certainly would be our recommendation, that I guess council gets the opportunity to consider this aspect in full.
Thank you, Councillor Dean.
I guess then I would just be interested to hear what, or read the room in terms of whether we are supportive of what staff have just said in terms of this will be looked at, as it says in the response, in February, or whether there is appetite for to make sure it 100% happens and potentially sooner that a report comes forward. I'd just be interested to hear what other people have to say before we move on.
Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I certainly do like the concept of rewarding our locals, but it would be nice to see like a discussion paper, a report on some of the pros and cons from staff prior to it actually coming to us as a policy. Just little things like, as has already been mentioned, Kingborough is only limited, and we might have several Kingborough residents who are working for a Hobart firm or a Huon firm, and should we be rewarding them with a small percentage as well? So I think there's so many things to think about. It would be nice to have a report come to us before it's a policy. So I'd be supportive of that too.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. Any other contributions? No? Councillor Richardson, did you want to sum up?
Nope.
Thank you. All right, then I will put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Richardson and seconded by Councillor Antoli. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
Okay, well, a show of hands is required. All those in favour? It's Councillors Antoli. Okay. I don't know what the confusion is. We're voting on the motion. Councillors Antoli, Bain, Richardson, Street and Reet. It does. And against is Councillors Fox, Dean, Midgley and Gladewright. The motion is carried.
Lost.
Could I ask a question?
No. Five. Five versus four. Even my bad maths could work that out.
There's only four names up there momentarily at one point.
Okay, so the motion is carried.
Could I ask a question? Will we get a report on this before the procurement policy is reviewed?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Given the council vote tonight, that would be the intention, yes.
Councillor Dean, question?
Yeah, clarifying question. Sorry. We will be presented with the policy. We won't be presented with a report considering... Because that's why I tried to talk earlier.
So General Manager will provide some clarification.
Through you, Mayor, I probably should have provided that clarity with the previous answer to Councillor Fox. Given that the notice of motion has been carried, the notice of motion calls for a policy, and a policy report will come back to council.
Okay, can we clarify that further? Because a policy report is kind of like having a bit each way. Is it a draft policy we will be presented with, or is it a discussion paper about the concept of having a local by local policy? I think that's the question everybody's looking for. Yep.
Sorry. Just so that there's absolute clarity, the notice of motion that Councillor Richardson put forward said the staff develop a buy local procurement and tendering policy for submission to Council for approval. That is what will come back to Council.
So we have another chance to discuss it.
Yep. Okay, we all good? Yep, all right. Thank you. So we are now on page 206, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. That in accordance with Regulation 15 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015, Council by absolute majority moved into closed session to consider the following items: confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, Kingborough Community Awards 2024, and AFL High Performance Training Centre. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recordings Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the Council meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourned at 7:09 p.m. I'm going to suggest that we have a break.